You know, I said this after Raw was over on Monday night. It came on here, and I said that normally this time of year, WWE falls into this funk where they phone things in, right? It's almost the end of the year. We're heading into Christmas and New Year's. And then you get into Royal Rumble season at the beginning of January, and then things, you know, they tend to heat up a little more often. And when that show was over on Monday night, I said the one thing you cannot say, whatever you thought of Monday Night Raw, is that WWE phoned that show in, because that's the last thing they did. Raw was an excellent show on Monday night. This tonight was the post-Survivor Series edition of SmackDown. And so one of the biggest questions that I had coming into it is, what would the follow-up be in terms of the Bloodline story? Because we had the main event on Saturday, Roman Reigns pinning Solo Sikoa. And we had the OG Bloodline standing tall. What would the repercussions be for Solo Sikoa with Jacob Fatu and the Tongans, right? What would be the next big development in this story? One of the things that we did not get from the show tonight was any real development on that front. We had the new Bloodline on the show. They are down a member. We will talk about why that is here in a second. They were on the show, they were wreaking havoc trying to reestablish their dominance, and what WWE tried to do tonight was have Solo Sikoa basically put his foot down and say, I am not a joke, I am somebody to be taken seriously, and you are going to take me seriously. It's a little hard to do when Solo goes in there and in virtually every big match that he has, he loses, as he did at Survivor Series when he ate the pin from Roman Reigns. There was no Roman Reigns on this show tonight. Jimmy Uso was hurt. He wasn't there. Sami Zayn and Jey Uso, they're part of Monday Night Raw. So we had no members of the OG were there tonight. Solo was there, and that was all we got. So if you tuned into this show tonight looking for any major developments as far as the Bloodline goes, and you would not be mistaken in thinking that there would be, because the Bloodline is all over the show every single week, then maybe you were left disappointed by tonight's show. I was not. I felt like Raw and SmackDown this week were both excellent shows, but in their own way. I thought both shows delivered in a way that they haven't in a very long time. Sometimes we get a good Raw and a shitty SmackDown, or a shitty Raw and a good SmackDown, and I enjoyed both shows this week. And the biggest development coming out of this show actually had nothing to do at all with the Bloodline, and it had everything to do with this new development going into the new year for Monday Night Raw and for SmackDown, where we have brand trades that are incoming. We have what was referred to tonight as the transfer window. Interestingly, this was the first time this has ever been mentioned. We had the draft back in, what, May? No trades. I was hoping for some trade activity throughout the year here and there with Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce. Nope. We didn't have any of that. I think actually that they dropped the ball big time on that. Now, all of a sudden that we're heading into the new year, oh, there's this transfer window. So this is the first time that we were hearing about this tonight. But it has been open like a portal. It's like the forbidden door in WWE has been open now between Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. Now, it's a bit of a joke because over the last couple of months, people have been moving freely back and forth between Monday and Friday. Nobody seems to give a shit. But now they're formalizing it, where the general managers of all three brands, including NXT, are putting their heads together and they're having conversations. They're having discussions about potential trades, moving talent around, because Raw is moving to Netflix on January 6th. Although WWE hasn't confirmed this yet, Raw is very likely, 99.9%, moving back to 3 hours. SmackDown is also reportedly going to be moving for the first time to 3 hours as of January. And I don't know if it'll be on that very first SmackDown on January 3rd or if it'll be a little bit later on. But the belief is that both shows are going to be 3 hours come the new year. And if that's the case, and you've heard me talk about this, where if you're going to have both shows at 3 hours, then you have to move people up from NXT. You have to move up women. From the women's division, you have to move up one or two tag teams at least. There's going to have to be talent shifted from NXT to the main roster to account for the extra television time. So this all makes sense, and I think that's the right move. I think that's something they should be doing anyway. But I love it. I love that they're doing this. I love that we don't have to wait for some silly draft to move pieces around and move people to where they need to be, move people to where they're going to make the shows better. This is why I was calling for there to be more trades and things like this throughout the year involving the GM, so you don't have to just wait for that one time a year to be able to move some people around. So now we're going to be hearing about this transfer portal over the next several weeks. I don't get the impression that any actual moves are going to be made until we get to that first week in January. But it does now open up a lot of very interesting possibilities, including, for example, tonight there was a backstage segment where we had the World Heavyweight Champion, Gunther, who was meeting with Nick Aldis. Now, what they were meeting about, we don't know. Gunther left with a smirk on his face. We never actually heard anything from him, but might we see champions? Might we even see world champions being shifted over from one brand to the other? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that's probably very unlikely, if for no other reason, because they went through all of this trouble to get the branding all uniform among all their championships, right? I mean, look at the titles on Raw. They all look like the World Heavyweight title. And on SmackDown, all the belts look the same. Are they really going to fuck all that up by taking one champion here and one champion there and moving them? Probably not. But one thing I am expecting is that we're going to see some big names moving. For example, Roman Reigns. There's been talk about Roman Reigns appearing more often in the new year on Monday Night Raw. And why not? Why wouldn't Netflix, who's paying $5 billion for the rights to Monday Night Raw, the most important period in the history of Raw is coming up next month, why wouldn't they want the biggest names possible on their show? Roman Reigns is the biggest name possible that you could think of. You got Roman and you got Cody. And right now, they're both on SmackDown. You don't think that at least one of them is not going to make the shift over to Monday Night Raw? And if it's not going to be the champion because they don't want to move the title, that would leave Roman Reigns. Does Roman Reigns move over to Netflix? Does the Bloodline story move over to Netflix? What about other names like Seth Rollins and CM Punk? You kind of have to keep them both on the same brand. Might the two of them move from Raw to SmackDown? But if Netflix wants all the big names, are they going to want Roman and Cody and Punk? Like, we don't know. I'm sure if Netflix had their say, they would get everybody on their show. I don't think USA Network would be very happy about that. So it's going to be very interesting to see where people end up. But I would actually be kind of surprised, to be honest with you, if we don't get Roman Reigns on Monday Night Raw come January of 2025. So this whole situation now, it opens up a lot of different possibilities. But we'll be talking more about this in the weeks to come. What we have to talk about tonight, in addition to this transfer portal stuff, is the fact that we now have new WWE Tag Team Champions. And I'm pretty sure these two are going to be staying put right where they are on SmackDown. But the DIY heel turn is complete. How about that? The New Day and DIY. Two of the biggest babyface teams in the entire company. And they go heel in the same week. And now Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa are your new tag team champions. The Motor City Machine Guns short, very uneventful run has come to an end. But I loved it. I loved what they did here on this show. And it played out pretty much exactly the way that I figured it would. Some people thought they were going to break up DIY. They are not broken up. It always was going to be a case where Johnny Gargano would simply have to come around to the way that Tommaso Ciampa was thinking. And I thought the way they did it tonight was actually very smart. One of the things that really stands out to me about tonight's show was that they tried things in a little bit of a different way. Right? We had the DIY ruse, and we had this surprise tag team title change. We had at one point the Bloodline, you know, attacking LA Knight and Andrade, and we had Kevin Owens being interviewed by Michael Cole in a car in the parking lot. Like, there were different things that happened on the show tonight, and the way they did them, that were a little unusual. It was a little out of their comfort zone. They broke up the formula. I love it when they break up the formula. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. This show tonight had that feeling to me. Like, okay, they're trying things a little bit differently, or things that we might not normally see here on this show. We also had another match, the final first round match in the Women's United States Championship Tournament. And speaking of surprises, you may not have been surprised. I was surprised by the outcome of this match. I definitely was caught off guard by that. But they were in Minnesota tonight. Tiffany Stratton was super over in Minnesota. You know who else you think of when you think of Minnesota? You think of the governor. You think of the body. You think of Jesse the Body Ventura. And guess who was in the front row tonight at SmackDown watching the show? There he was, the man of the day. Because this morning, Jesse Ventura made news. WWE made it official that Jesse the Body Ventura will not only be a part of Saturday night's main event next weekend, but he will be a part of every Saturday night's main event special that they do going forward. And there's already a second one announced for next month. But he will officially be part of the announced team on that show. Now, they have not specified exactly what he will be doing, if it's going to be a match, two matches, backstage interviews, because he used to do those too. They didn't really get into the specifics of that. I personally can't imagine him sitting at the desk calling the entire show. Maybe he only does the main event. Whatever it is, though, I fucking love it. I love it. And the minute he made the announcement that he was signing that Legends deal with WWE, and we already knew Saturday night's main event was coming back, how can you not? You know, I mean, it's just the perfect marriage here. This is a show that he was on the very first one. In 1985, now he's back in the family. You're not going to have him on that show. Come on. So I was very happy to hear that news. And again, they're going all out with Saturday night's main event as far as the throwbacks and the nostalgia with the music and the graphics and even the arena setup. And now Jesse, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. I'm very much looking forward to that show next weekend. It's going to be like a pay-per-view around here. We're going to be covering it like a pay-per-view. It's going to be great. This is your Friday Night SmackDown review. It is December 6th, 2024. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for hanging out with me here on a Friday night. I did mention at the top that we had a bloodline tonight that was down one man. Unfortunately, he was not the only one who was injured in the War Games match at Survivor Series last weekend. And they opened the show by letting us know three men came out of that War Games match on the injured list. We just thought it was two. We didn't even know about the third one until tonight. The one that we did know about, the main one, is Big Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed, this great spot that he got in the main event of this PLE, first time in his career, big moment, big spotlight for him, and he wanted to take advantage of it. He wanted to make the most of it, so what did he do? He got the big highlight reel spot where he climbed to the top of the cage in War Games. And he came off the top with a tsunami splash. And unfortunately for him, he came a little too straight down on his feet instead of more flat. And he fucked up his ankle. And if you go back and you watch the replay, I'm sure you saw some of the still photos that were floating around on social media. It was super nasty. You could tell it looked like he broke his ankle. I mean, it was like Adam Copeland. I mean, it was terrible to look at. And so they showed actually the x-ray, and what it was a broken foot. Now, he did mess up his ankle. I don't think his ankle was broken, but he broke his foot. So he's going to be undergoing surgery this upcoming week. That's going to keep him out probably for a while. I don't want to sit here and say he's out for WrestleMania because I'm not his doctor, so I don't know what his rehabilitation is going to look like, but it doesn't sound good. It does not sound good at all. You got the Rumble coming up, Raw on Netflix, you know, and he's a Raw guy. WrestleMania, it's a terrible time. I mean, there's never a good time to get injured, but this is a fucking awful time for him to go down, and I feel bad for him, and it sucks because he was one of the highlights of that show on Monday night, but it was pretty clear that he was going to be gone for a while. I remember Triple H at the post-show press conference said that he was going to be questionable for the next few weeks, and I said, you're being very diplomatic when you say questionable. It's a little more than questionable. So Bronson Reed is out. Jimmy Uso also flew off the top of the cage. Hey, I got an idea. How about we stop flying off the top of the cage every year? Maybe it's time that Triple H, if he wants to continue to do War Games, he goes truly old school with it and puts a top on the cage. I know people are going to cry and they're going to bitch and they're going to moan. Oh, we can't get Io doing her moonsault and we can't get this person doing a dive. In War Games, you're supposed to be trapped inside the cage like rats. There's a reason why the top used to be on the cage. I think it might be time to put the top back. So Jimmy Uso broke his toe, and they showed a slow-mo replay of it, and you could see, you know, his toes just went boom, you know, down into the mat. So Bronson Reed, out indefinitely. Jimmy Uso, out indefinitely. Who's the third man? Tonga Loa. Poor Tonga Loa, man. People are always just leaving this guy, like, always, like, in the back. Hey, what about me? Everyone's talking about Jimmy's broken toe and Bronson Reed's foot. Nobody said a word about Tonga Loa all week. I didn't see any reports anywhere about Tonga Loa. But they showed CM Punk in the War Games match when he took out the red toolbox and he was bashing Tonga Loa on the mat in the arm with the toolbox. Well, evidently, he injured Tonga Loa, or at least they're crediting it to the toolbox shot. I mean, why would they make that up? Clearly, he got hurt, and they had his x-ray as well. And he tore his bicep. So he already had surgery. They showed the surgical scar. His arm was already in a sling. He was not on the show tonight. So you could add Tonga Loa to the list. Out indefinitely. So technically the bloodline is down two men, but Bronson Reed was not a full-time member. Tonga Loa is. So now we're not going to have Tonga Loa for a while. You know what? War is hell. They did not come out of that War Games match unscathed. See, maybe Nia Jax was onto something in the women's match when she was laying in those light-ass chair shots. I didn't hear about any injuries in the women's War Games match, only in the men's War Games match. Maybe they were right. Maybe they had it right the entire time. So anyway, the show begins here. The show, Apollo Crews is entering the building and coming through security, the security checkpoint. At the same time that Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu, and Tama Tonga were entering the building. And he kind of blew, you know, Solo blew right past Apollo, and Apollo was bothered by this. Like, you saw me standing here. So then Jacob Fatu super kicks him in the face, and he and Tama Tonga end up beating up a bunch of security geeks. Meanwhile, in the arena, Cody Rhodes makes his way out to the ring to kick off what they told us would be a commercial-free first 30 minutes of the show, just like Raw on Monday night, open with the commercial-free 30 minutes. So Cody comes out, and he speaks glowingly about the return of Saturday night's main event. This was the return of corporate Cody this week. He was not out here angry, pissed off like he was the week before. He was out here to be the big promotional guy and put over the return of Saturday night's main event. And he was quickly interrupted by some music that we're not used to hearing on Friday nights. This was the first real surprise of the night. American Made. Chad Gable, the Creed Brothers, and Ivy Nile. They make their way out on stage. So normally on Raw, but here they are on SmackDown. Gable talked from the aisleway, and he called himself the greatest athlete to ever come out of Minnesota, because they were in Minnesota tonight, so the crowd reacted favorably to that. And then he referenced this transfer window. This is the first time we heard the transfer window mentioned here on this show. So I was like, what is he talking about? And he teased that maybe he and his crew might possibly come to SmackDown on a permanent basis. Gable then called everybody in the crowd simple-minded and gullible just to make sure that he would get booed, which he was. Gable got into the ring by himself. The other members stayed outside. And he said that Cody was once the beacon for what Gable wanted to be. Unmatched work ethic, comes out every week, you know, playing the part, looking the part, all dressed up to the nines. He said that part is easy. He goes, what's not easy is being a good friend. He said Cody has not been a good friend to Kevin Owens. He said Cody is not who he thought he was. He called Cody superficial because all Cody cares about is what everybody thinks about Cody. Gable mentioned how Cody went so far as to team with the one guy who made Kevin Owens' life a living hell. Gable said whatever Cody has coming to him, he deserves it. So Cody said that he's disappointed that Gable said what he said because he sees a lot of himself in Chad. He said Gable has taken things that weren't special and he's made them special, and he maximized his minutes, and he brought up Shorty G, which is a name that just needs to just be burned in a fire. It needs to go die in a fire. So, of course, the minute he mentions Shorty G, the crowd starts chanting Shorty G at him. I mean, this is like R-Truth going around reminding people to call Pete Dunne Butch on Raw. So he brings up the fucking Shorty G stuff. But he brought it up to illustrate that, well, I've done the same thing. He goes, Shorty G, meet Stardust. And there was like a light Stardust chant in the crowd. So Cody said he knows all about what Gable is going through. Gable probably thinks he has nothing to lose. But Cody asked Gable, what happens when you fail again? Even Cody knew how this was going to end tonight. As soon as I saw Chad Gable walk out on this show, I knew exactly how this was going to end. Even Cody knows. Now it's like a running joke. What are you going to do when you inevitably fail again? Like he's clairvoyant. By the way, that you know, every time I mention that word, it just makes me think, like, is there a woman? There has to be, right? There has to be at least one woman somewhere in this world. I mean, you know, you could look in the phone book. We don't have phone books anymore. Now I'm dating myself. But, like, I'd be curious to know if there is, in fact, a woman out there whose first name is Claire and her last name is Voyant. And, like, how fucked up that must have been for her parents, you know, to name her that. Right? There has to be. There has to be. The things that go through my head, I just don't know. Other than the air. The things that go through my head, I just can't predict. You never know what I'm going to say. Anyway, Cody's making fun of Chad Gable. He puts over everybody in American Made until Gable cuts him off. And Gable said, if I didn't have a suit on right now, I would whoop your ass. And Cody said, well, since you're here to see Nick Aldis tonight, why don't you go lace up your boots and ask Aldis about going one-on-one with Cody in the ring here on this show tonight. So Gable gets himself a main event match here on this show against the WWE champion in his hometown, or his home state. The possibility of American Made going to SmackDown is something that, I mean, I've talked about before, moving people around, AJ Styles going from SmackDown to Raw, Drew McIntyre maybe going from Raw to SmackDown. Chad Gable and American Made moving makes sense because what else is left for them to do on Raw? They've already been beaten by everybody. They've already feuded with the Wyatt Six and they lost. Like the actual move of Chad Gable going to SmackDown is something I endorse. I think that's a fine idea. What I laugh and scoff at is the idea that he's going to move to SmackDown and all of a sudden things are going to be so different for him. I would love to believe that it would be. I look at what Triple H is doing with Shinsuke Nakamura right now. Another one of his NXT alum, as Gable is. And he's getting a bit of a push right now, right? He even gave him a championship. How long is it going to last? How serious of a push is it going to be? Too early to say. We don't know. I would love to think that Chad Gable can be that guy. That should be Chad Gable's spot. All due respect to Shin, the spot that he now finds himself in is the United States champion on SmackDown. That's the fucking spot that Chad Gable should be in. Do I have any faith that he's going to suddenly rebound and go on a win streak or he's going to end up with the United States Championship? I don't, even though it makes perfect sense, right? American Made, United States Champion. I hope it happens at some point, but I laugh because why should I believe that it's going to? All the times that I thought, okay, this is going to be Chad Gable's moment. This is the story to tell. This is the direction I think that this is going to go in. Oh, he certainly has to win the title here. Oh, no, no, no. He didn't win there, but he has to win the title there. And every single time, he comes out a loser. So it almost doesn't even matter, quite frankly, where you put the guy. He's talented as fuck. But I've been given no reason to finally have faith that they're going to do anything of note with him. So why am I going to sit here and get all excited about the possibility of Chad Gable all of a sudden being moved from Raw to SmackDown? Yeah, go ahead and do it, but I'm not going to get excited about it until you give me a reason to get excited. Right now, I have no reason to be excited about that. Still a move I would make, just because he's all out of options on Monday Night Raw. It's not going to get any better for him there, so you may as well. But this segment set up the main event later on in the night. Backstage, we see Bianca Belair and Naomi. And she's wishing Naomi good luck in her U.S. title tournament triple threat match tonight. And so off to the ring goes Naomi. And then Bianca is encountered by Chelsea Green, who's already advanced in the tournament. She'll wrestle Bayley next week. And Piper Niven. And Chelsea called her Nancy Drew because she was trying to solve the mystery of who attacked Jade Cargill. Chelsea mocked Bianca for losing their U.S. title qualifying match. And Bianca responded by asking if Piper was the one who took out Jade to get her, her being Bianca, out of the match. Right? Because Bianca took herself out of the match when she saw what was going on with Jade. Remember, she ran away. She ran to the back. So she wanted to know, maybe Piper is the one who attacked Jade. Piper says she didn't touch Jade, but she would touch Bianca in the ring. Oh, my God.
Shut the fuck up.
Oh, my God. Look who it is.
Fuck that tree.
It's the learning tree. Infecting SmackDown as well. Fuck that guy. Piper said she didn't touch Jade, but she would touch Bianca in the ring later if she wanted. And Bianca threw a punch, but she got kicked in her injured ribs. Her ribs had kinesio tape all over it from the War Games match. And they kicked her in the ribs, left her laying, and Piper told her that she would see her in the ring. And what we had next was the final first-round match in the women's tournament to crown the first-ever United States champion, Naomi against Tiffany Stratton against Electra Lopez. And this may have been, in fact, I'm almost positive that this was Electra Lopez's first main roster match. I can't remember her being in a match since she got called up. So as with B-Fab, when she was in the tournament, she also had a first round match. Lopez hasn't gotten any ring time since she's been called up from NXT. So, you know, watching her here in this match, I felt like B-Fab maybe looked a little bit better in her match than Lopez did here. Lopez didn't look bad, but you could tell. Like, you just watch her, and you could tell, like, she just doesn't get a lot of ring time. And they're not even running as many house shows, so I don't even know that she's getting much time off camera, let alone on camera. So she looked okay, but she just has to get more reps in there. The fans did not hate Naomi, but Tiffany Stratton was clearly the fan favorite in this match because she is from the state of Minnesota. They mentioned on commentary that this was her first match in her home state that she's ever had. She probably had family there. Lopez hit a version of a Blue Thunderbomb on Naomi, but Stratton broke up the pin attempt. And all three women found themselves down on the mat. Everyone got to their feet. They brawled, and Naomi got the better of it with a weak-looking rear view to Stratton. Candice LeRae showed up and distracted Naomi very briefly as she was setting up for a split leg and moonsault. And Lopez briefly took advantage of the distraction, but Naomi did end up hitting the split leg and moonsault to Elektra and had the cover when Stratton broke it up with a springboard senton from the apron into the ring. She tossed Naomi out of the ring and then pulled Lopez to the center of the ring. Now, she pulled her so much, like so far away from the corner. I'm looking at this going, wait, she's too far away. But then Tiffany goes and she hits her prettiest moonsault ever, and she landed it perfectly. She landed it flush, dead center in the middle of the ring. And she covered Electra Lopez and she pinned her to advance to the semifinal round of this tournament, where she will now wrestle Meechan. Meechan. Got a point to the chin. Whose chin is this? Meechan. I don't know. If this was an experiment, I will say this. If this was an experiment to see how well would Tiffany get over as a babyface, then she passed with flying colors. And she was going to get this reaction anyway, because again, hometown, and you know, of course you're going to be over in your hometown. But how big of a babyface she can be, the sky's the limit. And this match right here, hometown or not, this match right here illustrates that. I mean, let's be honest. It's not like she doesn't get cheered in a lot of other cities. It doesn't have to be Minnesota or any city in Minnesota. So she's going to be a big baby face one day. Today is not that day. I was genuinely surprised, though, by this finish. I mentioned there was a finish on this show that shocked me. And maybe shocked is too strong of a word. clearly it was going to be either Naomi or Tiffany, but I thought for sure Naomi was moving on in this tournament. I thought for sure that Naomi was going to the finals, and I thought she was going to win the entire thing. She was my pick to win this tournament and become the first U.S. champion. She did not even make it out of the first round. What a giant loser Naomi has turned out to be. This has not been her year. She has had a lot of big losses. I thought this was finally going to be the turning point for her. She failed against Nia Jax for the women's world title a few weeks ago. Yeah, the WWE Women's Championship. And I thought, okay, well, the U.S. title will make for a nice consolation prize, and maybe she'll even go heel at the end of it. Does not even make it out of the first round. I will say this, though. If she is going heel, and if she is going to be revealed as the attacker for Jade Cargill, which I believe she will, then none of this matters. None of this matters. If in the end she's going to go heel anyway, then her losing here in the long run will not make a lick of difference. And I do think that's the direction that we're headed in. Now, Tiffany has moved on. Like I said, she's going to wrestle Meechan. Bayley is going to wrestle Chelsea Green. This makes things a little more interesting now because there's a few different ways that they could go with this. The obvious match might be Bayley against Tiffany Stratton in the finals. That could go either way. That could go either way. I don't know why you would put the U.S. title on Tiffany when she's running around with a contract case for the world championship. That just doesn't make any sense to me. So, yeah, she could go to the finals, but she's not going to win. To me, that would make it even more obvious that Bayley is going to win the championship. There's no real drama in that. So then that tells me, well, we have Meechan and we have Chelsea Green. Now, the women's U.S. title, the women's intercontinental title, these titles, who they will benefit the most are women like Chelsea Green and Meechan. It's women like Lyra Valkyria and Dakota Kai and Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark and people like that who are not in the mix for the world championships. I thought they would want the title on somebody that had a bigger name to start with, and then, you know, one of these women could ultimately beat them for the belt. It looks to me, though, like probably on Raw and SmackDown, we're going with some of the lesser-known names, and they're just going to put the championship on one of them. So Meechan going to the finals only makes sense if Chelsea Green goes to the finals, because then you have a rematch. These two feuded only a couple of months ago. This could very well be Chelsea Green's time on Saturday night's main event. They're going to crown a new champion next weekend. And if it comes down to Chelsea Green and Meechan, Meechan already beat her in the dumpster match. This could be Chelsea's revenge for that loss in their dumpster match. And Chelsea Green may walk away with the U.S. title, and I don't mind that. I would have no issue at all with Chelsea winning the title. I actually think she'll get a huge babyface reaction during the match, and then if she wins, I think a lot of people would like to see her with that championship. So we went from what I thought would be a Bayley-Naomi final, and then whatever turn coming out of that, to what probably now looks like Meechan and Chelsea Green, which doesn't have the same marquee value, I guess, you know, of a Bayley-Naomi match and their friendship and the story there. But Tiffany Stratton going to the finals, Tiffany Stratton winning the title, that just doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm thinking we're looking at Meechan and Chelsea Green. Michael Cole said that there was a commotion all of a sudden in the back, and he was, you know, listening to something in his ear, and he mentioned Byron Saxton's in the back. And we see that Byron rushes over to find that the Street Profits have been laid out. We don't know by who. Montez Ford is down on the ground. Angelo Dawkins is on the ground. B-Fab is, you know, she's over there trying to figure out what happened here. I'm thinking, my God, maybe they were taken out by the same person who beat up Jade Cargill. Right? But Nick Aldis was there, and he said that both men need medical attention badly. He pulled out his cell phone, and he's racing through the hallway, and he bumps into the tag team champions. He bumps into the Motor City Machine Guns, Alex Shelley and Chris Sabin. And he tells them the Profits just got attacked because the two teams were supposed to have a tag team title match tonight. And he said, I'm so sorry, guys. They were attacked, and you know, obviously the match is off now. Well, how convenient that all of a sudden, Johnny on the spot, literally Johnny on the spot, Johnny Gargano shows up. Oh, well, they're hurt. What about us? What about DIY? We'll take the match. And Aldis is like, look, this is all very fresh here. You know, they just got attacked, and he looked like he was about to say no, like he's not going to make the match. When Alex Shelley piped up, and he said, no, if they want the match, we'll give it to them. And Aldis said, okay, if that's what you want, then it's official. Tonight it'll be DIY challenging the Motor City Machine Guns for the tag team titles. And Aldis told Johnny Gargano, he said, you better let Ciampa know. I don't want to have to regret this. And Johnny said, you're not going to have to worry about Ciampa. It should have been very clear at this point who attacked the Street Profits and where this was headed. But we won't spoil that just yet. We'll get there. Bianca Belair, one-on-one with Piper Niven. This was one of those matches, I will say, that comes out of nowhere. It's unannounced. You hear about it, it's like, all right, whatever. You know, Bianca Belair against Piper Niven. Okay, sure, why not? Comes out of nowhere, and they go out there, and it's so much better than you thought it would be. And that it's not to say that Bianca is bad. Bianca's great. So is Piper. But I wasn't expecting this to be as good as it was. Story was Bianca wrestling with injured ribs. Niven was in firm control of things. Bianca tried to fire up. Niven cut her off with a running senton twice over. Niven worked a waist lock, which turned into a bear hug, and then Bianca fought her way out of it. Tried to put her to sleep with a sleeper hold until Niven shook her off, and then she went for a splash, but Bianca moved out of the way. Bianca went up top. She hit a crossbody for a nice near fall. Bianca then hit a spear for a two count and then tried to lift Piper for the KOD, which is a terrible idea when you have injured ribs. Probably not a good idea to be lifting people when you have injured ribs, but she tried and she failed. And Niven countered with a Saito suplex. Piper ran at Belair and Bianca caught her with a spine buster. Bianca stepped over her. She hit the ropes. She came off with a standing moonsault, but Piper got the knees up, right into the ribs. Niven then went for a cannonball in the corner, but Bianca moved. Piper caught Bianca for a Piper driver, which is really just a stiff sit-out powerbomb. It looked great, and she got a nice near fall out of it. Niven went to the second rope. She was setting up for her finish when Bianca cut her off, and Chelsea Green was out there. She hopped up on the apron. Bianca dragged her into the ring, and Bianca then tried again to lift up Piper Niven, and this time she was able to get her up on her shoulders in position for the KOD, and she delivered a KOD to Piper Niven onto Chelsea Green. And then Bianca covered Piper, and she got the three count to pick up the win. This was a really good match, and the crowd was super into it. Like, they were hanging with the near falls here. They were firmly in Bianca's corner. The fans in the arena loved this match. I don't blame them. It was very good. I tell you what, I wouldn't have minded if they would have given Piper the win, but Bianca Belair is one of the most protected talents in the entire company. In terms of her win-loss record, in terms of her finish, she really is. I mean, she is treated in many ways like the Cody Rhodes or John Cena of that women's division. She's super protected. So realistically, even with the out of the injured rib, because the out was right there. Like, if she lost, nobody is going to look at her any less. She came in with injured ribs. And they still didn't give it to Piper. I'm not surprised by that. But in the back after, Bianca is walking, and she ran into Naomi. And by the way, don't think I didn't see in the background Nick Aldis having a conversation with Dominic Mysterio, right? Trying to play up the transfer portal. It was very brief, but it was clear as day in the background. So Bianca said, look, she was very sorry to see Naomi's loss earlier in the U.S. title tournament. And Naomi was very frustrated, and she said that she was fed up with Tiffany and Candace because, you know, she can't shake these two. So Byron Saxton showed up and told Bianca, look, I heard you earlier talking about the possibility, making the accusation that perhaps Piper Niven is the one who attacked Jade Cargill. And he said, I just want you to know, I can personally confirm that I saw Piper sitting outside Gorilla during Bianca's U.S. title tournament match. So basically, he gave her an alibi. Byron Saxton is Piper Niven's alibi. So she's innocent. She didn't do it. And he asked, you got any other ideas on who may have done it? So Naomi interjected. And she said, well, as a matter of fact, there's a whole list of people that you can choose from. There's Nia Jax, and there's Tiffany Stratton, and there's Candice, and there's Liv Morgan, and there's Raquel Rodriguez. Bianca said that she doesn't know who did it, but when she finds out who did it, she's going to drop them on sight. And the two of them walked off. I was watching Naomi's reaction the entire time. From the moment that Byron Saxton showed up and he brought up the whole Jade Cargill thing, I was watching. My eyes were planted on Naomi, watching her the entire time. And then she piped up first. Oh, yeah, we've got this whole list of potential suspects. Of course, her name is not on that list. But let me give you all the names of the people that I think could very well be the one to attack Jade Cargill. It's got to be her. I mean, I thought it was probably going to be her anyway before, but now I'm convinced that Naomi is... I mean, look, she got bounced out of the first round. If she's not turning heel, I have no idea what the plan is, unless with this whole transfer window, they're just going to move her over to Monday Night Raw. I don't know if they would want to have her and Jimmy on separate brands, because Jimmy's a SmackDown guy, but to me, that's just, what are you really changing with Naomi? She needs a change. And that change should come in the form of a heel turn. Because if anybody has a right to feel frustrated as fuck and adopt a new kind of, attitude where she's got a chip on her shoulder and she's not going to take shit from anybody anymore, it's Naomi. Again, she keeps losing and losing, and she's being frustrated by Tiffany and Candice getting involved in her matches. You can understand it. If she suddenly snapped, or if she was tired of people like Bianca and Jade having the spotlight. She wants some of that spotlight. When's it going to be my turn? It's got to be Naomi. We got a video package showcasing Shinsuke Nakamura and his transformation over the past 3 weeks since he came back, including his U.S. title win from Survivor Series over LA Knight. After a break, Nakamura made his entrance, and again, as I said last week, I am loving this new remix theme song of his. Really, the whole presentation they have for him is great, and he gets into the ring, and he's kneeling on the mat, and so he's not done yet with his entrance, but he gets interrupted by LA Knight's music, and he comes out, and he calls Nakamura a joke of a United States champion, and said that he won with a cheap shot, and that makes him a cheap champion. And he demanded a rematch for his title, and Nakamura didn't seem very interested. He was completely unresponsive to this. So Knight said, well, the only thing Nakamura has done to my face, you've spit mist. So I'm going to put on my mist blockers. And he put a pair of LA Knight sunglasses on. He came down to the ring. Before he could get into the ring, we heard Andrade's voice. And Andrade comes walking out with a microphone, and he said that he had unfinished business of his own with Nakamura. This, of course, was after Nakamura pulled the turnbuckle pad off in their match last week and then beat him. This was the night before Survivor Series. So before they could get very far, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and this is one of those unpredictable things on the show that you didn't see coming, the Bloodline attacks LA Knight and Andrade. Mainly Tama Tonga and Jacob Fatu, but Solo Sikoa was there as well. He didn't get his hands dirty. But the Bloodline attacks, and they leave LA Knight laying, and they leave Andrade laying. They get ambushed. All three Bloodline members now are in the ring, and they're surrounding Shinsuke Nakamura, who's got a defensive posture. He's got black goo. He's like full-on Muda now. He's got the black goo now dripping from his mouth. Solo then waves off the dog. He calls off the dogs. And Nakamura at that point leaves the ring. Solo then delivered Samoan spikes to both LA Knight and Andrade. And then he took the microphone. And he was not happy. And why should he be? Because he's a loser. He lost for his team at Survivor Series. He got pinned by Roman Reigns. So he's not happy. He says, anybody who thinks the Bloodline is weak or anybody who thinks the bloodline is finished, he dared them to step up because the bloodline will lay them out every single time. He said he was tired of not being taken seriously. He was tired of being looked at as a joke. He said people can laugh all they want, but he was still the tribal chief. He still has the Ulafala. He's still the head of the table. He demanded Minneapolis acknowledge him, and they all held up the ones. And that was it. You know, I was waiting to see if somebody was going to come out. I thought maybe Roman Reigns was on the show. I was, you know, waiting for something to happen here. And they just played their music, and that was it. So they tried to get Solo Sikoa his heat back by doing what they did here. Again, it was an unexpected ambush. She didn't expect the bloodline to come out during this segment. But this was their way of trying to get Solo back in the, I guess, in the win column. It wasn't a win, but just, you know, trying to establish him as a threat, even though he's been put in a position where he hasn't exactly demonstrated recently to be too much of a threat. They want you to believe he is, right? He's very upset about what happened at Survivor Series, and so now we hit the reset button. And we're going to show people that you need to start taking me seriously. To me, that ship sailed a long time ago. I'm sorry. I have to think the plan is still to build to Roman Reigns in a singles match against Solo Sikoa. Now, I didn't think it was going to happen on Saturday night's main event. That's too quick of a turnaround, and they didn't announce anything tonight. You do, however, have that first Netflix Raw. I know they're SmackDown guys, but again, it's all hands on deck for that first Raw. You've got the first Netflix Raw. You've got the first SmackDown of the new year. That may well be the destination if they're going to do that match. I really would rather they not wait until the Royal Rumble. I certainly don't want them to wait until fucking WrestleMania. Could be that first SmackDown on January 3rd. But I think we get Roman and Solo one-on-one. Who is the tribal chief? Winner gets the Ulafala. Winner take all. And again, the idea that I had, and this is one way that it could play out. I'd like to see it play out this way. They have the match, and Roman Reigns wins. And Roman Reigns gets the Ulafala back because Solo Sikoa had mentioned this months ago, before Jacob Fatu even showed up. He told Tama Tonga this. He goes, no. If he beats me, he's the tribal chief. I will acknowledge him, and I will hand him the Ulafala. Right, long-term storytelling. So he loses, and he surrenders the Ulafala, and that's when he surrenders his power in the bloodline, and he gets beat up by the other members. And you just go from there. You tell the next chapter of the story from there. And the new bloodline has a new leader in Jacob Fatu. That is one direction that I personally would like. I mean, there's many ways it could go that I would probably be okay with, but that was the idea that I had to tie it back into what Solo said all those months ago. But we'll have to wait and see when they do the match. If they do the match, I'm sure they will. It will not be next weekend, though. So then you look at LA Knight and Andrade here. They get laid out. Is Carmelo Hayes going to be reintroduced into this whole U.S. title picture if Andrade is? It doesn't look like it. It looks like Hayes is going to be involved in something else based on what happened later in the show. But Knight, Andrade, and Shinsuke Nakamura now appear to be setting up possibly for a triple threat soon for the United States Championship. This whole interaction with the bloodline, it probably doesn't matter as far as them and Knight and Andrade. You know, maybe they do a tag match. Maybe it's LA Knight and Andrade, you know, against Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga. It's possible. I don't really look at this bloodline ambush here as being anything that's going to play into a lot of future shows here. I think it was just the means to surprise people and just establish the bloodline's dominance. What I was wondering, though, is, you know, it's like if they didn't put the championship on Nakamura, Jacob Fatu would make a great United States champion. If that's the direction they wanted to go in, you could have had him, you know, maybe beat LA Knight and win that championship. And he'll have titles in his future. But that would have been something. To have Jacob Fatu wind up in that spot. Nakamura getting the championship, it's not something that you can really even entertain. Either he's going to have time to have a decent length run, or the title is just going to go right back to LA Knight. It's going to be one or the other. But Yeah, look, I enjoyed their effort to try to put more heat on Solo Sikoa, but like I said, I think that ship has sailed, and the quicker we can get to the match with him in Roman, the better off we'll all be. Now, backstage, we had a conversation that was ongoing between the members of DIY. It was Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. Ciampa said that Johnny got them this title match, huh? Okay. He goes, this doesn't fix things yet. We should have had this title match a long time ago, he said. Ciampa said that, you see, he's like a wrestling fan. He really is. Can never be happy. This guy just got a title match tonight. He's still not happy. I'm convinced that Tommaso Ciampa has a burner account, and he's one of us complaining about the shows every single week on social media. Ciampa said that he still wanted an answer from Gargano on his question from last week. Remember, he asked him, whose side are you on? What team are you on? He said, maybe we'll find out when I see you out there. Kevin Owens cut a promo from his car because we were told that he was supposed to be doing a sit-down interview backstage somewhere with Michael Cole tonight. They had a room somewhere and the chairs and everything was being set up, the lighting. They showed that to us before. So now Kevin Owens is sitting in his car. And he said it sucked to be told that he had to be in Minneapolis for an interview with Michael Cole. He said he's been showing up to SmackDown for weeks now, and if Cole wants to interview him, he would have to go out to the parking lot and find him in his car because he is not coming inside the building. So the Judgment Day decided to make their way out. Ian, thank you for the $32 super chat. Retro KOH says, Ciampa was an RSPW regular. That sounds about right. Under what name, though? I'd love to go look for his posts. Maybe I could feature him in the next installment of RSPW Rewind. Probably under some random name. You know, fucking Beefman 7923-4 or something like that. But Owen said Cole was going to have to come out to the parking lot to talk to him if he wanted to do his interview tonight. And Cole, on commentary, they went back, you know, to them at ringside, and he complained about the fact that I have to go out in the parking lot. It's 20 degrees outside. It's Minnesota in December. Come on. Who wants to be in Minnesota in December? We had the Motor City Machine Guns against DIY for the WWE Tag Team Championship. Ciampa jump-started things here and attacked Chris Sabin. Sabin came right back on the attack. And Shelley tagged in. The two of them hit a whole flurry of moves on Ciampa before Ciampa was able to work out of it. And he tagged in Gargano. And Gargano worked on Shelley's arm. And Ciampa tagged himself right back in. He yelled at Johnny and said, pay attention. He was not happy. He felt he was going soft on these guys. So the show came back from break, and Ciampa had the upper hand on Alex Shelley. Shelley worked out of it, and when Ciampa went to go give Shelley a boot, Shelley moved out of the way, and Ciampa accidentally booted his partner. He kicked Gargano right in the face and knocked him down off the apron to the floor. So Ciampa looked down at Gargano. He yelled at him. He called him stupid, like Randy Orton to Kofi Kingston all those many years ago. What a stupid man. Shelley countered. When Ciampa went for a fairy tale ending, he got the tag to Sabin, and Sabin ended up hitting a crossbody from the top rope that connected for a two count. Shelley tagged in. They worked over Ciampa. Now Gargano reappears on the apron, and Ciampa threw Shelley outside the ring, and he very aggressively tagged in Johnny Gargano. So Gargano rolls Shelley back into the ring, and he gets back inside. Ciampa's not happy about that, right? He wants him to be more aggressive. What is this? He knows that Shelley and Gargano were friends and you're going easy on him, right? That's why he's so upset. So now we have Gargano and we have Ciampa. They're face to face in the ring. And Ciampa shoves him. And this time, unlike the last time, Gargano gives him a shove back. Gargano tells Ciampa to leave. Ciampa shouting back at him, that's it. DIY is dead. And he rolls out to the floor. And he storms over to the timekeeper's area to grab a chair. Meanwhile, the Motor City Machine Guns, they're setting up in the ring for their finish on Johnny Gargano. Ciampa takes the chair, and he gets on the apron. Now, I could see where this was going. It was clear as day where this was going. And you could see Ciampa, when he had the chair, as he was kind of climbing to get into the ring, he accidentally, you know, kind of bumped into the ref with the chair. So, of course, the referee looks down. He sees the chair. Now Ciampa's up on the apron, and he's got the referee distracted. Johnny Gargano is now in position to take this finish from the Machine Guns. But he counters out, and he delivers a low blow to Chris Sabin. And Alex Shelley is on the ropes, and he's looking down like, what are you doing, right? This is his friend. What are you doing? He climbs down. Johnny Gargano super kicks him in the face. And you can see Tommaso Ciampa on the apron. He smiles. And Gargano very smugly goes over, and he tags in Ciampa. And they hit their meet in the middle finish to Chris Sabin. And they regain the WWE tag team titles. So Gargano and Ciampa have turned heel. I said it before, in the same week as the New Day, right? Two babyface tag teams. Johnny Gargano, my God, such a white meat babyface. How could you turn this guy heel, right? Even though he was heel for a while in NXT. But in NXT, he was such a great babyface, and I thought that there were times on the main roster where you could tell that Gargano, you know, he could absolutely get over as like the scrappy underdog babyface, but he was never over on the main roster at the level he was in NXT. He just wasn't. So I'm all in favor of this change. You know, it's an attitude adjustment for these two. For Ciampa, it's like the Ciampa of old, because this is the version of Tommaso Ciampa that we had in the black and gold. Like, we know how great of a heel he can be. He's a better heel than Gargano is. But to split them up just would not have made any sense, because you already have a lack of depth in the tag team division at a time when the bloodline now, as far as Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa's hurt. Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows are technically SmackDown talents, and Karl Anderson just had surgery not that long ago. He's out. So you do have a problem right now where if you split these guys up, all you're doing is you're further crippling your tag team division for no reason at all. So to split up DIY made no sense to me. And plus, Johnny Gargano would have been dead in the fucking water, right? Ciampa as a singles heel definitely would have had potential, you know, like U.S. champion potential. Gargano, I just don't think that would have ended up well for him. The best thing to do would be he comes around to Ciampa's way of thinking here, and they go heel, or at least more tweener. Clearly, this was a heel turn for them, though. They just went full-on heel, where he gave the guy a low blow, and they were gloating about it. This is his friend, right? So they went heel. I thought it was great the way that they handled this. And the question, I suppose, is, was this a ruse the entire time, going back, you know, a couple months? Or was it a case where Gargano simply just came away to Ciampa's way of thinking? I'm thinking it's the latter and not the former. But the way they did this was great. You know, all through the match, they kept you thinking, you know, the heat between them and Ciampa pushing him around and the violent tags. And I just thought the way they handled this was actually tremendous. And as far as the Motor City Machine Guns losing their tag team titles this quickly, I know some people are going to be upset about that, or they're going to say, what was the point? I kind of feel like this was the point. The point was to, you know, get the titles away from the bloodline, number one. That really was why the title change even happened in the first place. But then again, I wonder also how far in advance they knew about the DIY heel turn. Like, how far in advance was this heel turn conceived of? And all the angst that we've been seeing now for a while, for weeks and weeks and weeks, with these three teams and the Profits included, it could have been the plan from day one, you know, for all we know. Them losing the titles, it doesn't kill the Machine Guns. You know, they were having some trouble getting over. The reactions were not great on most weeks. I still think that they needed to and still need to do a better job of establishing their characters and fleshing out their characters. And I'm surprised we haven't gotten the video package treatment for them. I'm surprised they haven't gone to TNA, who they're in partnership with now, and said, look, we need some footage of these guys. and put together a video package letting the WWE audience know about their history and how long they've been together for and how many times they've been tag team champions and how influential they've been to a whole generation of talent and why they're such a big deal. Why Corey Graves comes on television and says they're your favorite tag team's favorite tag team. They tell us this, but I don't think they've done a good enough job of really fleshing out their characters on this show. That's part of the reason why you see a lot of fan apathy towards them. Losing the titles is probably the best thing for them right now. I think they're better off in chase mode, trying to go back after them. Then there's the Street Profits. Who attacked the Street Profits, right? It's pretty clear who attacked the Street Profits. And I'm not even... Maybe it was Johnny by himself. Or maybe it was both members of DIY who were in on it from the start. But either way, we know who attacked the Street Profits. They're... Unlike on Raw, where I think there is still some doubt as to who attacked Jey Uso on Monday night, there is no doubt here about who attacked the Street Profits. But I do wonder about the Street Profits now, because the Street Profits have not been tag team champions in this company for 4 years. And, you know, this year they've had so many opportunities and they've lost every single time. Every single opportunity they have lost. Now we have new tag team champions. You really think they're going to take these titles off of DIY anytime soon? So what are they going to do now? They're going to go in there and just lose again? What does this mean for them? What does this mean for Tez and for Dawkins? Because it doesn't look like they're going to be getting these tag team titles in the near future. I wonder about where they go from here. Obviously, they're going to want to go after DIY, but I don't see those belts changing hands. Maybe in this talent portal, maybe the Street Profits get moved back to Monday Night Raw. I don't know. In the near term, they're going to want to get their revenge. But yeah, for them to just go in there and lose again, I just don't see where they go from that. I don't see how they recover from that. Right? The people like them. They're over. How many times can you go in there and lose, though? You know? I don't know. I like what they did here, and I thought that it was well done. Now, Michael Cole, at this point, he left the announce desk because it was time for him to go find Kevin Owens in the parking lot. After a commercial break, they replayed the end of the tag team title match and then cut to the back live where Ciampa and Gargano were celebrating. Candice LeRae showed up, and she congratulated them, and also they did this so Gargano could acknowledge and remind people that, oh, it's my wife. It's my wife, in case you forgot, because when was the last time they really did anything together on TV? So they were all celebrating, and Ciampa and Gargano said they would tell their kids that they aren't losers. I wish Chad Gable could do the same. That poor girl. That poor little girl he's got at home. I just, you know, never forget the tears in her eyes when Daddy got beat by Gunther. And here I naively thought that at the time they were holding off for WrestleMania, and Chad Gable was going to get the big comeback story this year, and he was going to win the Intercontinental title from Gunther, and then they gave it to fucking Sami Zayn. Silly me. Every time this guy goes in there, I just, in my head, I picture his daughter at home, and all of a sudden she's watching the show, and she's all happy to see her dad challenging for, you know, a championship or wrestling in the main event or whatever it is, and then he loses again. Ooh! This poor girl. This poor girl's going to be traumatized. Her father never wins. She probably gets picked on at school, this poor girl. I wish that Chad Gable could say the same as Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa did here. They have gold. He does not. That's just the way it is. Michael Cole walks outside the arena. And he sees Kevin Owens. I was hoping he would actually have to go walking through the entire parking lot looking for the right car. Owens would like flash his lights or something, but the car was right there. So the car is sitting right there. And Owens says, look, I'm tired of being told that I have to come into the building. You want to talk to me? You got to get into the car. Here, come around and get into the car. So Cole sits down next to him, and they had like a dash cam for this. It was like something out of Carpool Karaoke or something. Cole said that he wanted to give him an unbiased interview, and Owens thought that this was hilarious because he called Michael Cole a Cody Rhodes fanboy, which is kind of true. I mean, Cody and he are very tight, and Cole is always singing the praises of Cody Rhodes, so not wrong. Cole said that that's not fair. You and I have known each other for, what, 10 years now? And Owens said, look, he just can't believe that. He doesn't see it the way that he does. And he ran through his usual grievances about Cody, and he mocked him for leaving WWE in 2016 when he didn't get his way. But then he comes back, and it's all about Cody Rhodes, right? Everything is about Cody Rhodes when he comes back to the company. And he's got his stupid logo everywhere. He talked about his pyro. He's got three pyros for his entrance. Three! And then he betrayed him on top of everything else. Cole said that Sami Zayn and the Usos both thought that it was a good idea to help Roman Reigns. And Owen said, look, I don't care what they think. The Usos are Roman's family. They've always been pawns for Roman Reigns. And as far as Sami Zayn is concerned, he said, there will come a day where he catches up with Sami. And then he quickly pivoted away and changed the subject back to Cody Rhodes. Because Cody is just top of mind for him right now. That title match is about a week away. So he's keeping his focus squarely on Cody Rhodes, but there it is, finally. The first acknowledgement of Sami Zayn since he agreed to team with Roman Reigns for War Games. Owens has said nothing about this. This is the first time that it's been mentioned, and the fact that they mentioned it, and Owens flat out said that it is something he will deal with at some point, that's a seed being planted right there. Could be a WrestleMania match. But that's the seed being planted for something that's coming in the near future. Owen said that Cole doesn't have any friends, so he doesn't understand betrayal. And Cole told Owens, look, if I could be honest with you and give you some advice, said that Owens is being petty and that he should look in the mirror. And Owens did look in the mirror, and he deadpanned that he saw a handsome man looking back at him. Cole said that Owens is the problem. And that line got Kevin Owens very hot, and he got very upset. And then he reached over across Cole's body. He opened the passenger side door, and he kindly asked Cole to leave my rental vehicle right now. So Cole left, but then Owens called him back over only to roll up the window right in his face. And then Owens drove away. The comedic aspect of this, maybe it was a little more humorous than it needed to be given the intensity of the feud with Cody and KO. And they've really done a good job of building Owens up as this unhinged, violent, dangerous maniac, and you never know what he's going to do. But I did laugh more than I... maybe laughed more than you would want somebody to laugh during a segment like this, because Owens is just a naturally funny guy, and his delivery is just a naturally funny guy. But I enjoyed this a lot, not just because it was funny and it was entertaining, but it was different. It was different. Instead of the usual interview, in-ring promo, the same stuff they always do, they broke things up a little bit by saying, you know what? Cole, you got to go to the parking lot and go sit in the guy's car and interview him there, right? And this was not cinematically done. There was no over-the-top dramatic music and, you know, multiple camera cuts. It was pretty straightforward stuff, but it was different. It broke the formula up a little bit. I like that. I like when they do that. And I thought this segment worked, as all of these Kevin Owens promos do, because Kevin Owens makes all the sense in the world and everything that he's saying. You could totally understand why this man would be frustrated. Everything he said about Cody Rhodes, everything he said about betrayal, right? It all has a ring of truth to it. The man just makes sense when he speaks. So I like this a lot. I enjoyed this. We go backstage. Carmelo Hayes approaches Nick Aldis, as Aldis is shown speaking to the world heavyweight champion Gunther. And Melo asks Aldis, so what are you doing talking to Raw guys? Because if I'm not a priority on SmackDown, then Monday Night Mellow on Netflix, it sounds awfully nice. So Aldis told him, look, I'd love it if you became Adam Pearce's problem, which is a hell of a thing to say to your number one draft pick, by the way. But he did have something in mind for him. And Hayes turned around to gloat. And then when he turned back around, Aldis was gone. Like a fart in the wind. Nowhere to be found. So we'll have to wait until next week, I guess, to find out who it is that Nick Aldis has lined up for Carmelo Hayes. And then we had the main event, which was non-title. It was the WWE champion, Cody Rhodes, going one-on-one with Chad Gable. Chad Gable gets his SmackDown main event here against the WWE champion. What a great spot for him to be in. Gee, I wonder how this is going to end. Let's find out. So Cody went to go run the ropes. Ivy Nile got up on the apron to distract him, and Gable used that distraction to attack him with the Dragon Screw leg whip. He slammed Cody's leg against the ring post, and the show went to the final commercial break. And this was the story of the remainder of the match here, was Gable working over the leg. It's just working over a body part. Same thing we saw Gunther do to Damian Priest in their match at Survivor Series. You pick a body part and you go to work on it. And you just try to break them down. So Gable hit a flying headbutt for a two count. He went back to the top rope, but Cody cut him off and landed a wild inverted superplex for the reset. Both men were down. They got to their feet. They traded blows. Gable ran at Cody, and Cody turned that into a snap power slam. He hit a disaster kick while still selling the leg. Julius Creed pulled Gable to the floor, and the referee ended up ejecting all of the members of American Made. Gable then took Cody's boot off, and he started to work an ankle lock. And Cody countered by sending Gable forward into the middle turnbuckle. Cody then ran the ropes with his injured ankle. Again, the psychology on this was not great. It's like Bianca having injured ribs, but I've got to pick up this woman who's bigger than me, right? These baby faces, man, it's all pride. They have so much bravado and too much pride, and they have no brains. That's the problem. Cody Rhodes is a week away from defending the WWE Championship against Kevin Owens, and he is in here with a bad ankle. Oh, let me run the ropes. This is a great idea. Why don't I just run the ropes here? So he runs the ropes and comes off, and he hits a Cody cutter. And with one boot on, Cody goes for crossroads, but Gable counters into an ankle lock until Cody is able to make it to the ropes. Gable delivered a German suplex, and he went up top, but he missed the moonsault. And then finally, Cody hit crossroads, and he picked up the hard-fought win. Cody stayed on the mat when the match was over because he was in dire straits here. He's clutching the ankle. He's in great pain. And then he looks up and he notices that Kevin Owens is standing in the ring looking over him. He's like a shark tasting blood. He sees Cody holding the injured ankle. He places his boot on Cody's ankle when Cody tried to move, and he stomps the ankle. And Cody tried to fight back here. We had a little bit of a brawl. Officials poured out from the back to separate these two. Cody ended up hitting a suicide dive out onto Owens on the floor. And the two of them just kept going at it. A wild brawl here as officials tried to separate them. That was the parting shot. Actually, the parting shot was Kevin Owens kind of shoving the camera out of the way. But that's how they went off the air. It was a good main event, and it was a nice showing for Chad Gable, but excuse me if I'm unconvinced that in the long run, this is going to make a lick of difference in the career of Chad Gable. You know, every time Chad Gable goes out there and has a match, he has a great showing. So why would this be any different? Of course he's going to go in there and he's going to have a great match. He always does. He's a great wrestler. Great wrestlers have great matches. So there was nothing wrong with the match. Gable looked good, but he's just never rewarded for it. And I guess as a fan of his work, I'm just tired of waiting for the reward and waiting for the reward, and the reward never comes. And as a viewer, it gets very frustrating when you see that. American Made as a whole, they put these guys together. I was very excited. I said, man, this could be like a modern-day Team Angle. You know what the difference is between Team Angle and American Made? Team Angle actually won matches. And I have yet to see any difference. If anything, I almost feel like Gable has maybe dragged these guys down. And it shouldn't be that way, right? It should be the other way around. So, yeah, he got a main event tonight, but his first match on SmackDown, and he fucking loses. Not that I expected him to beat Cody. I mean, I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying they put him in a position to lose again. And I just don't, I don't know what the end game is here. Do they or do they not have some plan for this man? Or is he so good at making other people look good that in their mind, he's like the new Dolph Ziggler, where he could just go in there and lose? And maybe every now and then when they have an idea, they'll put a belt on him, like a mid-card belt, because they have somebody else in mind that he could drop the belt to. Like, is that what he's destined for here? Or is he ever going to have the spotlight put on him? That's what I'd like to see. So I'm hopeful. I can't say I'm terribly optimistic, but I'm hopeful. I think American Made on SmackDown is the right call. The story here, though, is Gable softening up Cody ahead of his title match with Kevin Owens next weekend. Clearly, the ankle injury is going to be a story or the story of that match on Saturday night's main event. And could be an out. It could be, if they wanted it to be, an out for Cody to lose that championship. Although it's probably more likely that Randy Orton will be involved in the finish in some way, either, you know, directly involved in the finish, or maybe he'll cause a non-finish. Last time we saw Randy Orton, he got dropped on his head by Kevin Owens, so of course he's going to want revenge, and this would seem like the right time to bring him back. But man, I have been, and you guys know, I mean, if you hear me on these shows or even on TNT, weeks and weeks ago, I was advocating for a Kevin Owens title change on Saturday night's main event before it became the cool thing for everybody to do on social media. Because I don't see what the harm is, even if it's brief, in doing a title change and giving Kevin Owens a championship run. He's doing great work right now, mostly on promos because he hasn't been wrestling. But I love this version of the Owens character. It's like the same way I feel about Hangman Page in AEW. There's just this new version of Hangman that we've seen over the last several months, and I love it. And I feel the same way about Kevin Owens, and they've tried to really make him out to be this sort of unpredictable, menacing, dangerous figure. Oh my God, look what he did to Randy Orton. He's beating up Cody outside of his bus, and what's he going to do next? Go all the way with it. Don't just build him up just for him to go in there and be fed to Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes is not going to be hurt if Kevin Owens beats him and Cody's got a bad ankle, and then Cody has to fight to get the belt back from him in a couple of months. That's fine. Shake things up a little bit. Show some balls. Don't be so scared. Don't play it safe. I'll be rooting for Kevin Owens next weekend. But with Randy Orton looming, it just doesn't seem likely that they're actually going to pull the trigger on a title change. There was an air of unpredictability, though, that SmackDown doesn't usually have. I will say there was an air of unpredictability, about tonight's show that I liked. American Made, even, coming out at the very beginning. Like, what the hell are they doing here, right? I wasn't expecting them to come out and open the show. So really, from the opening segment, the Bloodline then attacking LA Knight and Andrade, the DIY heel turn and the tag team title change, Naomi losing in her match, to me anyway, that was a surprise. Cole having to go outside the building and interview Owens in his car. It's nice to just change things up a little bit. I like that aspect of the show tonight. And this transfer window is a welcome development, and it's a necessary one. You don't need a draft. Because let's be honest, the draft sucks, okay? The WWE draft, the way they do the draft, the way they did the draft this year, the draft fucking sucks, okay? And if I never have to see another draft show again, then it won't be a week too soon. The draft itself fucking sucks. So what we need is certain times a year, you can have a designated period, a designated window. We have a trade deadline in baseball, for example, right? You can have a designated period or two throughout the year where the general managers of all three shows can freely negotiate and they can move people to different places. And as injuries happen and as storylines dictate, people come, people go, you may need to move this woman over to that brand. Oh, this brand needs a tag team. Okay, so negotiate to bring a tag team up from NXT, right? I mean, you've got tag teams there right now. Fraxium, great babyface team. Gallus, either of those teams. SmackDown could use a team like that. But I like the idea of being able to move people around and it's not as part of an actual draft. Because if there's a draft, we're not getting one until May. You can't wait until May. These shows need to be freshened up. These shows are going to go 3 hours in January. They're going to need more people. They're going to have more women. They're going to have more tag teams. And so it's okay to not have to just wait until the draft to move a whole bunch of people around. So we're going to get a roster shakeup. It'll freshen things up. Raw is going to get a lot of power behind it, being on Netflix. I think Raw has always been looked at as the A show. It's like their baby, right? It's their original. It was there before SmackDown. It will always be looked at as the A show. Even when SmackDown was the better show, right? Raw still the A show. It's the flagship. Now Raw is going to be getting a lot of love with this move to Netflix. I just hope it doesn't come at the expense of SmackDown. They could really use this roster shakeup as a way to strengthen both shows. That's my big fear, and I hope they don't just strengthen Raw at the expense of SmackDown. Especially if the show's going to go 3 hours. You're going to have to put as much muscle behind it as you possibly can. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Everybody listening to this has safeguards on their computer right now. I can guarantee it. You've got a password or a passcode to get into it, or an antivirus program, encrypted files, something. Because you want to make sure that you're protecting yourself. But what about when you're browsing around online? Going online unprotected is like leaving your door unlocked when you leave your house. You might trust your neighbors, but what about that creepy guy at the end of the block? You know, the one who drives that white van around the elementary school all the time. I don't trust that guy. I definitely wouldn't trust him enough to keep my door unlocked. With ExpressVPN, you can stay safe without having to trust any random strangers. We don't do that stranger danger stuff around here, no sir. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, that could be in an airport, it could be in a hotel. Your online data is not secure. That means any hacker on that same network can easily access your personal data and do any number of things with it, none of them good. It's not hard. A 12-year-old could do it. Hackers make up to $1,000 per mark, which is what you are to them. You are nothing more than a mark. They can make up to $1,000 selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Now, what makes ExpressVPN the best VPN? It's super secure, and it's super easy to use. You open the app, you click one button, and you're done. It also works on all of your devices. There's a reason why it is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. In my travels this year, I always made sure that I have ExpressVPN installed and active on my phone to keep my important data private the way it should be. That's why it's important to me. My information is for my eyes only, not for anybody else. That's why it's my data, not theirs. With things like phishing scams and all sorts of identity theft, there's no such thing as being too careful. Right now, you can take advantage of ExpressVPN's Black Friday Cyber Monday offer to get the absolute best VPN deal that you will find all year. Use my personal link, expressvpn.com/solomonster, to get 4 extra months with the 12-month plan or 6 extra months with the 24-month plan totally free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 4 or even 6 months of ExpressVPN for free. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of SmackDown for December 6th? 88.7% thumbs up, 11.3% thumbs down. This is a great week in terms of the main WWE shows. I can't speak to NXT. I haven't seen it yet, but I enjoyed Raw and I enjoyed SmackDown tonight. See what you guys have to say. By the way, we are currently at 415 likes. So thank you for that. That means Be the Booker is on the way. Always a great way to end the week with some Be the Booker. But let's start here with Prince Vegeta 95. It says, Chad Gable doesn't have the makings of a varsity athlete. No, he does not. Chad Gable, he's a great athlete, but he never had the makings of a varsity athlete. Just don't let Tony know that you said that. Otherwise, he'll be very upset. And you'll have people saying, why is Solomonster talking about Tony Khan? Jerome Eugenio. Gable mixing things up. Instead of losing on Mondays, he is now losing on Fridays. Hey, it's good to change. I said before, it's good to change things up a little bit, right? It's good to change things up a little bit. I can't wait to see him on Tuesdays. Doing a job for Trick Williams. Mr. AJ Allday with the $10 super chat. Bianca casually putting on a random banger TV match does my heart good. Don't care for DIY unless this is leading to a Street Profits title win. Thank you, Solo, for all you do. You are our podcast chief. Yeah, I mean, DIY losing to the Street Profits, it could be the long-term plan, but I mean, my guy, after all the losses they've already suffered, how many more times are the Street Profits supposed to lose? You know, you hope when the day comes that they win the belts, it'll be this great reaction, but can't just keep losing. Alex with the $25 super chat. Brother Solo, although not as strong as Monday's show, this was yet another great show with a great main event. What are your thoughts on WWE putting Gable in the main event with Cody? You finally see a push in 2025. I'm going to be doing my prediction show in a few weeks. I'm not even going to make a prediction on this, though. I'm done making predictions for Chad Gable. I hope for the best. That's all I can do. The United States Championship is occupied right now. Maybe he can win the women's U.S. title. Maybe he can hijack the women's U.S. title. But beyond that, I don't know that things are going to be any different for him. Certainly not in the near future. Would love to be wrong about that, but I don't think I am. Base Beerus, thank you for the $2. Tonga Loa Superfan. Oh my God, Tonga Loa Superfan is going to be so upset. Oh, I feel so bad for Tonga Loa Superfan. After the news tonight about the injury. If Tonga Loa is not at WrestleMania, then what's the point of all of this? Tonga Loa Superfan, I want to give you a big old hug just to give you some comfort in this time of need that I know you have right now. I feel so bad for you. His whole world has just come crashing down. You just got to keep hope alive. Maybe he'll have those John Cena mutant healing powers and he'll be able to come back a lot sooner, but yeah, it's not looking good. It's really not looking good. K-Dog's Kennel, celebrating 4 months of channel membership. Hey, Solo, just want to wish you and yours a very happy holiday. Thank you for all the content that you bring. Hey, K-Dog, I'm wishing you and yours a very happy holiday as well. Thank you. I appreciate that. Kyle Meyer with the $9.99. First time watching SmackDown in years, based solely on the hype of WWE, I tuned in. Love the Nakamura stuff, but it's still the same exact childish stuff. Dead crowd for a packed house. Bummer. Dead crowd. A crowd seemed pretty hot to me, especially during that women's match. Both women's matches, actually. Dev to Dust says, people who Solomonster looks like, Jerry Seinfeld, Humphrey Bogart, Jimmy Stewart, Larry Bird, Brian Danielson, Orange Cassidy, and Jake Hager. Well, you forgot John Laurinaitis, according to Kofi Kingston many years ago. Add him to the list. Base Beerus says, watching the stream from a Domino's at the moment. Domino's, really? You could do better than that. At least Pizza Hut, you know? Come on, man. I used to have when I used to be able to have pizza. And again, I haven't had pizza in fucking 15 years at this point. But when I used to have pizza, man, I got those personal pan pizzas. I know it's kind of a sin to live in New York City and to go anywhere but just, you know, your local pizza place for pizza, but I got to admit, those personal pan pizzas were always a favorite of mine from Pizza Hut. I'm not ashamed to say. Jeremy Thunderstrikes, it's about to be my birthday, the big 2-5. Been keeping up with this channel and the pod since 2019. Thank you. Since you always keep it 100% real. And he thanks his friend Zero, I guess, for, leading him to the channel. So, hey, Jeremy, happy birthday. I don't know what you got planned, but I hope it's something special and you have a lot of fun. And thank you for the support. I appreciate it very much. Ross Lawman. Thankfully, we did not get the transfer portal I'm a genius announcement. LOL. Do you see WWE making title changes on house shows anymore moving forward? I don't, because they're not going to really be running very many house shows at all. They're going to be running fewer and fewer, and that makes it less and less likely that we're going to get a title change. On the flip side of that, though, we have more titles now. So you would think the chances actually go up because there's now two new singles women's mid-card championships. So you can't rule it out. I think a good shock title change with like a lesser title on a house show every now and then is a great idea. But they're going to be doing fewer and fewer of them, so... probably not. NWO Matt, the Learning Tree versus Tonga Loa for all world titles in wrestling at WrestleMania 41. NWO Matt is hitting the eggnog a little early this season. Happy trails, NWO Matt. Holiday 197. Hey Solo, I see the major players ending up on Raw for Netflix and SmackDown becoming the workhorse show to build future stars. Gunther may go to SmackDown, Cody, Roman, and Randy to SmackDown. I think he means Raw. It's going to be an issue, though, with those titles. Again, they went through the trouble of redeveloping and redesigning all the belts for brand consistency. And then what are you going to do? You're going to move the World Heavyweight title over to the other show? I mean, I guess if it's only temporary, but that's the only thing stopping me from thinking that Gunther might move to SmackDown. And you can't put all the big names on Raw. You can put some of them. You can't put every big name you have on Raw. You've got to leave some big names for SmackDown. Especially if the show is going to go 3 hours. Raw says 3 people injured in War Games and CM Punk was not one of them. You know, that's a great observation. I didn't even put 2 and 2 together on that. It's true. Hey, good for him. Good for him. He's proven a lot of people wrong so far. He hasn't been back for that long. Right? He only came back in August, but he's been able to stay healthy so far. But we are heading into the Rumble. We are heading into WrestleMania season. I don't want to jinx it. Right? We lost him for WrestleMania this year. Hopefully he's able to stay healthy. But yes, 3 people injured in War Games, and he was not one of them. That's amazing. Dan Richards says, Elimination Chamber worst seat in the house is over $200. So I'll be watching at home with a $20 six-pack and watching the Sala Monster recap. Crazy prices currently. Dude, it's crazy prices for every one of their shows. Like, it's ridiculous. Especially the international shows. I mean, it is insane. You look at the show in France and the show in Scotland and the show in Berlin. Like, the prices are insane. But if they're able to sell tickets at those prices, then there's no incentive for them not to. Plus, they like announcing that they keep setting these gate records. Right, they're going to do the same thing in Canada for Elimination Chamber. John Cena, everything's going to be built around John Cena's final ever appearance in Toronto. And they're going to end up announcing that that's the biggest gate they've ever done in the history of what used to be the Sky Dome. If not all of Canada, right? They're going to want to continue doing that into the new year, record after record after record. And they say it, I don't know that we actually have any evidence of it anymore. They don't really give us numbers. Since TKO took over, we just have to take their word for it that it's always a new gate record when they tell us it's a new gate record. But as long as people are buying the tickets, a lot of people are going to get shut out. A lot of families are going to get shut out. I mean, it's one thing to go by yourself or with a friend. Imagine if you want to take, you have a son and a daughter, and you want you, your wife, and your kids to go to one of these shows. How are you going to afford it? The tickets, the concessions, the parking. So a lot of people end up getting shut out and they have to watch it at home. But you know what? It's the best seat in the house. Because as soon as the show is over, I'll be here. So you could tune into the stream. So it's all good. Noel Mulligan. Hi, Sala Monster. I work in a laundrette. Always have you on in the background. It's so interesting. I haven't seen that word used in a long time. Usually it's just laundromat. That's where I was yesterday. You can listen. The great thing about the sound of, you can watch me and you can listen to me from anywhere. It doesn't matter. If you were kidnapped and you're locked in the trunk of a car being driven down the road somewhere, as long as you've got your phone on you, you can watch the Solomons. Right. Hopefully that never happens to you, but I'm just saying, if it did, right? You could listen to me anywhere. It's great. Just pick up your phone. That's all you got to do. Base Beerus says the injuries add to the lore of war games. Okay. Hey, war is hell. War is hell. Ross says clairvoyant is now all elite. We have the Meal Slayer celebrating 8 months of channel membership. Just wanted to say the sleep you lose in exchange for the work you put in does not go unnoticed. You give us quality content. I love you, Solo. Thank you, Meal Slayer. I definitely don't get as much sleep as I should. Probably shaving years off my life because you really are supposed to get sleep each night, but I'll sleep when I'm dead. Zizu gifted a membership to Mystery Deck. Congrats. Retro KOH, I'm late to the stream. My computer was frozen. Turns out it's because I left the windows open. Troyishka says, tell the captors put Solomonster on before you tie me up in the trunk. That's right. Just tell them, look, I don't want anything else. Just tune to YouTube and just put this guy on, please. It's all you need. Hell, the captors may become fans. See, I may save your life in the end. Angel Alega. Love your TNT streams with JD. Both Raw and SmackDown were very good this week. Thank you, Angel. Glad you've been enjoying the shows. And yes, Raw and SmackDown, I enjoy both shows this week.
With a tear in my eye.
I enjoyed Dynamite, too. Does that make me a bad person? According to some people on the internet, it does. But I don't really give a shit. We've got DEH Sires. Bianca is fantastic. Love that she is not afraid to get hit hard, unlike some of the women in that War Games match who looked like they did not want to break a nail. He also says, if Triple H decides for War Games next year, I would make it an elimination match to not have a first 25 minutes look like they are on cruise control. Yeah, I mean, if there's a reason, a real good setup for a War Games match, then do it. And if there isn't, then I'm in favor of skipping it for a year. And you don't want to do an entire show full of elimination matches, but bring one back, right? Do an elimination match, build a story around it. No harm in doing that. Joseph Stewart with the $9.99. Is it true that the original plan for Test and Stephanie's wedding was for Test to leave Stephanie at the altar and have him turn heel and feud with the McMahon family. I'm not aware of that being the plan, no. I've never heard that before. Test was super over during that period, too. I mean, they could have had a real, like, top babyface in him. I don't mean top like he would have been higher up than Austin. I just mean he could have been established as a top babyface main eventer on that show. And felt like he got sabotaged, honestly. That's kind of what it felt like to me. The Juliet, does Tangaloa's injury make way for bringing in Hikuleo or Zilla Fatu? They're not bringing in Zilla for this, but Hikuleo's already signed, so it's only a matter of time before we see him anyway. It could hasten his arrival. We may see him a lot sooner. It's like Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre was not supposed to be back this soon. He was going to be gone for at least a few more weeks, but Bronson Reed getting hurt necessitated them bumping his return up. Ian Noel, if reports, quote-unquote, are true and The Rock does not have plans for WrestleMania, I have a feeling they're not done with Solo Sikoa. He may beat Roman with The Rock's help to keep Solo versus Roman to build to Roman's real WrestleMania opponent, whoever that is. Yeah, there's been a lot said about The Rock this week. The reality is nobody knows. Anything you've read this week about The Rock, don't even bother putting a second thought into it. Right? We're not even in January yet. Nobody knows what The Rock's plans are or aren't for WrestleMania at the moment, except The Rock and maybe Paul Levesque. And I'm not even sure he knows for sure what The Rock is doing. But anything you read about The Rock, I wouldn't put much credibility into anything right now. Not because people are trying to mislead people, but just because they don't know. And we're not going to know for a while. Innuendo, Jacob is praying to the Ulafala, not Solo Sikoa. Really, is that the reason why he constantly yells, I love you, Solo, every 5 seconds? He's not saying, I love you, Ula. He's saying, I love you, Solo. But he's saying it because Solo is probably in possession of the Ulafala because he is the tribal chief. So if he surrenders the Ulafala, he is no longer the tribal chief. Then he has no reason to follow him and to watch his back anymore. Hence, my idea for how he gets kicked out of this new bloodline. Ian Noel, TLC match at WrestleMania. Motor City Machine Guns, The Street Profits, and DIY. I could see it with Street Profits winning the titles there. Yeah. I could see that. Innuendo, with 2 months of channel membership, I love you, Solo. If Chad Gable does make the move to SmackDown, do you see him dethroning Nakamura for the U.S. title? No, I do not. Heel dethroning a heel? No. NWO Matt, babyfaces are boring. All hail the heels, who are normally correct. A lot of them are correct, actually. A lot of them make a lot of sense. We got C, just the letter C, a $9.85 super chat. Long time listener, first time super chat. Keep up the good work, Solo. You're making the Aussie heat right now. The Aussie heat right now a bit more tolerable. I wish I could make the heat in this house a little more tolerable. Freaking boiling in here, but it's freezing outside. But then in a few days, it's going to be 55 degrees again, so I don't know what to make of it. As long as we don't have snow on the ground that I have to drive in, I'm happy. Right now, we're snow-free. C, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And Dan Richards coming in. Gable loses so much. Apollo's daughter picks on her. Oh, Apollo Crews's daughter. Does Apollo Crews have a daughter? Meet Huncho, celebrating 14 months of channel membership. I love to see it. The Meal Slayer. If only there was a band called Downstate that could make a theme song for Kevin Owens akin to Unsettling Differences from Kevin's run in Ring of Honor. I'm just saying. I'm trying to think if I remember the song, and I don't. So I can't speak to how good or bad it is. Jeremy Rose with the $20 super chat. What do you think about Seth, KO, and Drew starting an anti-bloodline faction where they are heels but tell no lies about the bloodline ruining their careers and all the hypocrites helping Roman Reigns, such as Cody, Punk, and Sammy? I mean, kind of like this uneasy alliance. Yeah, I mean, it could be interesting. I don't see that happening. It could be interesting, though. Kind of like this alliance where they don't really necessarily like one another, but they're kind of brought together by a common bond. It could be interesting. What name would you give them? If they're all against Roman Reigns, they're like the anti-bloodline. Is that their name, maybe? The anti-bloodline? Like, what name would you come up for a group like that? Tonga Loa Superfan. If Tonga Loa misses WrestleMania, that's 2 years in a row the WrestleMania main event matches had to change due to an injury. Tonga Loa Superfan is just not taking this well at all. I didn't even know up until recently that there was a Tonga Loa Superfan, but they come in all forms, I guess, right? There's always at least one out there. The alliance to end Roman Reigns. Well, I don't know. That didn't go too well for the alliance to end Hulkamania. I hope it goes better for the alliance to end Roman Reigns than it did for them. Chris AXC, the Bloodline, Seth Punk, Cody KO, Drew, Sammy, and Jay. All major men's storylines tied to Roman somehow. This is a good thing or a bad thing? Well, I mean, considering Roman Reigns is the top star in the company who has been tormenting people for the past 4 years, I think it's great storytelling, actually. You can have all these feuds as like an offshoot from this one character. Roman was champion for nearly 4 straight years, so it kind of makes sense that you would have these different stories and these different players in the stories that would have been impacted by Roman in some way. He was the guy. It's all about him. He was the champion. He had the power. When you build the entire show around one faction for 4 years, it's kind of hard not to be touched in some way by that story. But it's also another reason, I think, why people don't want to have anything to do with Roman Reigns, because the guy's a dick and he hasn't changed. Alex says, forgive me if this has been asked before, but are you recapping NXT Deadline tomorrow? Any predictions for the show? No, I am not recapping NXT Deadline. But I might try to check it out. I might have to record part of the show early, so possibly I might be recording on Saturday night. We'll see, but no, I'm not recapping the show. Ian Noel, I've always felt like other sports, there should be a draft right after WrestleMania and then allow trades at any time until after the Royal Rumble. So chances to shake up the roster multiple times and make things unpredictable throughout the year. That would make sense. And I don't know why they just didn't take advantage of the draft format in that way. Take advantage of the fact they have two capable general managers on the main roster right now that could easily be swapping people back and forth a few times throughout the year. Why we're only getting a mention of this now in the last 3 weeks of the year. But again, the actual draft itself, when they put together those draft shows, the draft itself is just It's just dog shit. It sucks. It's boring. It's stupid. And if they were to completely abandon the format altogether, I wouldn't cry. You know, you could just have some kind of trade deadline. You could set up rules for when you can and when you can't, you know, discuss trading talent back and forth or calling up new talent from NXT, you know, without having a draft show. I know why they do it. They want to be like real sports and they want to have a draft show and build it up like it's the NFL draft or the NBA draft, you know, and then they give us the show and it's like, okay, this is fucking boring. It's stupid. But I'm sure we'll get another one in a few months. Power Spine Games. Why are there a lot of Chuck Norris jokes but no Steve Blackman jokes? Because Steve Blackman is no joke. No, he's not. Steve Blackman is definitely not a joke. Scott Woodford. Crowd was hot most of the night. I was there. Well, that flies in the face of the other super chat from earlier. Somebody who doesn't really tune into the shows usually, who said that the crowd was dead. I didn't think the crowd was dead. I actually thought the crowd was pretty lively throughout the entire show. But if you haven't watched the WWE shows for a while, if you're first just now coming back around to it, I guess it really depends on your frame of reference. You may be comparing it to a time in WWE where the crowds were just generally hotter. Right? There have been hotter crowds than tonight, but I thought tonight's crowd was fine, actually. I thought they were very loud. Retro KOH, the next time I get abducted, I'll send a super chat to the Solomonster for emergency assistance. You do that. I don't know what I'll be able to do for you, but hey, low-key lean, you're very welcome. Ian Noel says, because they love WWE PLEs in London and Paris and, oh, okay. And Tokyo, America, Scotland, and Canada, and Mexico. They say, that damn these prices are high. That damn these prices are high. It took me a few seconds before I realized what you were doing there. Thank you, Ian. OM2 Cool, like you said on X. Hope we get those awesome pre-match graphics for Saturday night's main event. They've already done so much to be faithful to the OG. I love you, Solo. I love those old wrestler logos that they would have. They were, like, illustrated. And before a match, they would put them up on screen. Like, Andre. I remember Andre was just, like, his handprint. And DiBiase had dollar bills. Yeah, I'd love to see it. Even if only for one night. You know, I'd love to see that again. They're being pretty faithful in what they're saying. It sounds like they're going to be pretty faithful to the whole throwback aspect of the show. You know, right down to the wrestlers coming out through the crowd. There's going to be like probably a little tunnel or entranceway out of the crowd, just like it was for the first one at the Nassau Coliseum. There's no stage. They even said like the lighting, like not that there won't be any lighting, but like none of the usual lighting. There's not going to be a stage or a set or anything like that. So I'm very, very curious what this will actually end up looking like. Like, I'm really looking forward to this show next week. Like, as an old-school fan of Saturday Night's Main Event especially, I'm very much looking forward to this show next weekend. To me, this is like a PLE. Oofman Entertainment says, when being kidnapped in the trunk of a car listening to the Solomonster is better than calling the cops. Well, I mean, that's hard to argue, really. I mean, I'm not going to disagree. Base Beer says, watching from Guantanamo right now. May I ask what you're doing in Guantanamo in the first place? Maybe I don't want to know. Ross Lawman, call 911. It's an emergency. Me listening to Solomonster. That sounds like a you problem. I wish you luck in your future endeavor. The Meal Slayer, if I hear Feed Families one more time, I fear for my sanity. Oh boy, who's saying that now? This is so good, it's gonna feed families. It's going to feed families for... the other one I love. I love this one. This is generational. Get the fuck out of here. Ross Lawman, did Solo just do his own Sammy Oosie Aussie moment? I think I did. I said Aussie. I meant Aussie. I don't want all the Aussies to come after me now. Justin G, if they draft pre-tape announcements and reacts at the shows, put it on YouTube, see the numbers, we'll see how popular it really is, or send an email. If they draft pre-tape announcements and reacts on the show, are you talking about the draft? They could do whatever they want on social media. I just can't stand these draft shows in the current format that they're in. Yuri says, knowing your hog ties... I don't know if you meant to do that, by the way, but that's kind of funny that he said hog ties. What is your dream match there with talents available? Also, growing up, favorite New York area indie. I didn't have a favorite local indie. I went to some indie shows, but I didn't have a favorite indie. A lot of the indie shows I went to were fucking terrible. But as far as a dream match, I mean, that could be anything. With talents available. I mean, you know, AEW talents are constantly taking independent booking, so you include AEW talents. Any number of great matches that could be had. But, I don't know. I don't know. We're always trying to put together interesting combinations that, you know, we think people would want to see. We've got Ricky Starks coming in for two shows within 8 days of each other. He's going to be in Chicago in January and then our first New York show of the new year on the 25th. So we got him coming in. He's facing Mike Santana on that first show. That's going to be a great match. I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to be careful. I don't want to single out certain people, hurt feelings, but I am the commish after all. You know, I'm the matchmaker here, so I gotta keep some of these matches close to the vest in case we actually do want to book them. But you look at some of the talent we brought in. Like Jake Something is a tremendous talent. We have Jake Something coming in, by the way, to wrestle Zilla at our next show in a few weeks on December 20th. That's going to be a great match. That is going to be something else. Base Beer says, Bob Holly said Blackman was as dangerous as Haku. Bob Holly was not the only one who said that. He did mention that. I interviewed him many years ago on the podcast. But Bob is not the only one who has talked about how dangerous Steve Blackman was. You did not want to mess with him. Jeremy Rose, for a WWE rookie, Jacob is such a good performer. He's great with his facial expression. Selling and his in-ring ability is amazing. Definitely a superstar. That's why I've been telling you guys this for a long time. When he was still in MLW and he was doing indies, I said, this guy's going to be a fucking rock star one day when he comes to WWE. And then he showed up and he slimmed down. He got himself in the best shape of his life because he took this shit seriously. He knows this is his big moment. This is his big break. Sky's the limit for this guy. He's an unbelievable performer. Super Pony, is it safe to assume is it safe to assume KO has re-signed? Interesting how there's been no news on that recently, huh? I think it's probably a safe assumption to make. We got C-Guy is here. Remember when Russo slammed Andre in the main event? Well, I mean, I'm sure Russo does, but... just ask him, he'll tell you. Justin G, if I'm abducted, doing Brie mode and causing a wreck... He just starts, like, the Brie mode super chat plays, and he puts the volume up on his phone, and, like, the fucking driver's like, ah, and he just drives off the road. Yeah, but if he drives off the road, you're probably dead, brother. car flips, like you're done for. I don't know if that's such a smart idea. Yuri, Saturday night's main event was a little before my time, but my dad always spoke of them. Obviously, I've seen the few ones they did in between. I'm excited for it. Yeah, it was a big deal back then. It can never be that again, because it's just a different world now where there's so many events. There's so many PLEs. Back then, you just had, like, if you go back to the early days, right? This is before even like all the pay-per-views at all. Because it started in 85. You had WrestleMania. The first WrestleMania had just taken place 2 months before. So there wasn't anything else. Like WrestleMania had just started. There was no SummerSlam. There was no Royal Rumble. So you had Saturday night's main event on NBC. And it was a big fucking deal to be on network television, and you didn't have a lot of big events anyway, so this was it, you know? Now it's like you got events every month. So I don't think it could ever be that again, but it could still be a special show with some big matches on there. If you do a title change on there, you're not going to have that many of them. You know, you're only going to get four. They're contracted for four. They're already blowing through their first two. So after the one on January 25th, they've only got two more for the rest of the year. So it's not like these are going to be happening every other month. So make them special. Because there's so few of them. Make them special. Retro says, sell or set on fire on the most cringe Gen Z say. Feed families or cinema. I mean, they both give me douche chills when I hear them, but feed families has just got to be the worst. I don't even know what the fuck that means. Like, it's just so stupid. Our boy is back. Tonga Loa Superfan. The Rock crawled so Roman could walk, and Roman walked so Tonga Loa could fly. Tonga Loa will be back. Get ready for a top three pop of all time when he returns. Well, I just hope he doesn't miss his cue the way he did for his debut. But I'll be rooting for him, and I'll be thinking about you, Tonga Loa fan. You keep your chin up, brother, okay? Bobby Means, I can honestly think some NXT call-ups will benefit the Raw Women's Division in particular. I think Roxanne Perez, Cora Jade would do it. Plus Sol Ruka. Well, I mean, don't forget also you've got Lola Vice. I've seen a little bit recently of Carmen, right? Carmen Petrovic. And you've got Jordan Grace, who I am sure within the next couple of months will be under WWE contract. And there's no reason for her to go back to NXT. You could rocket her right to Raw or rocket her right to SmackDown. Charlotte Flair will be back soon. Becky Lynch is going to be back soon. So you'll have some options of people coming back and people that you could call up. Base Beerus says, do you think Roman wins the title in 2025? I do not. Power Spine Games, there's a police chase happening in the area. It is wild. Oh, shit. Well, maybe they're chasing after somebody who abducted another person. And maybe they're watching this stream right now in the trunk. This could actually be playing out in real life. This is exciting. Yuri says even JBL admits that Blackman beat his ass. Yes, he did. He did. I think it might have been Bob Holly who actually told that story. It was at an airport, I think. And JBL used to stir shit and mess with people, and there's just some people you don't mess with. And Steve Blackman was one of those people. That was the definition of fucked around, found out. Ross Lawman. Don't worry, don't you worry. Ricky will be at Hog. Ricky is safe. Base Beer is the Great Khali pinned Cena clean at Saturday night's main event. Oh my god, I forgot about that. What was that, 2006? God, that run, that run, that Saturday night's run back then, Saturday night's main event, so forgettable. Prince Vegeta, I just gotta say, I wasn't a fan of how Gunther got punked out by Finn Balor on Monday. The dude never wins and is much smaller than Gunther is. Got punked out. I mean, he got double stomped three times after his match. He got jumped. I mean, it's not like they were face to face and, you know, Balor just laid a beating on him. I think people have forgotten that Finn Balor is somebody, if you think back to the NXT run, especially when he went heel. Like, Balor's not a pushover. You know, you just kind of forget because he's been on the back burner for a while. But Balor is no pushover. And Yuri with the $10 super chat, just a dono to give homage to my dad, rest in peace, who got me into wrestling. His birthday is Monday. Growing up, he had magazines from as far back as 68 and 69. His birthday is Monday. I'll have to come back for the Raw review. Well, rest in peace to your dad and happy early birthday. My dad got me into wrestling and his dad got him into wrestling. They actually went to the first WrestleMania together. So it's a family thing for me too, where I don't know if I'd be sitting here right now doing this show if I didn't have a family member who was a wrestling fan who got me into it. It's like me being a Mets fan. I have, you know, vague memories of the early games I would have gone to, which was like 1987. Well, it was probably right after they won their last championship is when I became a Mets fan. Those are my earliest memories. I still have a yearbook from 1987 from one of the games. And I used to go to the games with my dad. You know, he was a Mets fan, and so I became a Mets fan. And Jeremy Rose, Blackman against Haku in an Iron Man shoot match. Who you got? I'm going to go Haku. Haku, you know, basically, you know, bit a man's nose off. Until I hear that Steve Blackman bit someone's nose off, I'm gonna go with the guy who did that. Groovy Goose says, thanks for the groovy stream, Solid Monster. Well, thank you for 32 months of channel membership. It's pretty cool. And I think that is all of your messages. Again, we are at 542 likes. You didn't just beat the goal, man. You beat the goal over the head with a baseball bat. I'd love to see it. Yuri says, GPA made me a Mets fan. He was a Dodgers fan that disliked the Yankees until they left. Oh, Grandpa. I was like, GPA. I was like, what does that mean? So Grandpa was a Mets fan. He was a Dodgers fan that disliked the Yankees until they left. I don't blame him. Being a Mets fan is better anyway. Even though we haven't won a championship in fucking 40 years. It's just more fun. I think so anyway. But I may be a little biased in that way. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
There she is, the queen of the ring. She was not on the show tonight. No Nia Jax. She was back at the castle, I guess. All right, tag team, be the booker. Here we go. Kick things off here with, aww. Well, this is depressing. Look at who we start out with here in Be The, of all the weeks. The New Day. Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods, and Big E. In happier times. Look at them. They look like one big happy family. And now, they don't. Not after this week. Yeah, this is awkward. This is a little awkward here. Let's see, the New Day, going to be taking on the team of Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. You know, you may be surprised by that, But a good match is a good match. And I do think that would be a good, especially Jay Lethal in the ring with those guys. I got to give that the belt. Got to be fair. I have no interest in seeing Jeff Jarrett in the ring anymore at this point, but as long as we keep things to a minimum, you get Jay Lethal in there with Kofi Kingston, Jay Lethal in there with Xavier Woods, and have yourselves a great match. All right, women's Be the Booker. We have, where's Bliss Fan? Where's Bliss Fan? There he is. Alexa Bliss. You were wondering, when is Alexa Bliss going to be back? She's back. I brought her back before WWE did. Alexa Bliss. Alexa Bliss probably going to be the women's intercontinental champion in the first half probably of 2025, if I had to venture a guess. She's already held the world title on SmackDown, the world title on Raw. She could be the women's intercontinental champion. I could see that. Alexa Bliss probably back by the Royal Rumble. If I had to venture a guess on that, she is going to be. Wait a minute. Mina and Mariah want to make this a three-way match. Of course. A triple threat match. But not with Mina and Mariah. We have to pick two other people. That's the stipulation. So Alexa Bliss is going to have some competition here. We're not making it easy for Alexa Bliss here in her first match. It's triple threat time. Oh my. Alexa Bliss and Mandy Rose is participant number two in the three-way. Who will be in the three-way with Alexa Bliss and Mandy Rose? Hikaru Shida. We have Alexa, we have Mandy, and we have Shida in a three-way match. I can dig that. I can definitely dig that. Yeah, we're doing pretty well here. All right, main event time. Shida goes over, says Mike. Oh, Mike, you may have to argue that out with Bliss Fan. I think Bliss Fan may have a different idea for how that match goes. All right, main event. We begin with the legendary Olympic gold medalist himself, one of the greatest of all time. Kurt Angle is in the main event of Be the Booker. How sweet it is. Nope, get out of here. It's definitely not sweet. I hit the freaking button. All right, Kurt Angle. Who will it be? Kurt Angle. I like where this is headed. Kurt Angle one-on-one with Jeff Hardy. That had to be a match in TNA at some point. I would assume. I don't remember offhand, but Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy spent so many years in TNA. I'm sure their paths crossed probably on more than one occasion. There had to be some pay-per-view that ended with a Kurt Angle-Jeff Hardy main event. Don't you love it when you hear that clean, sweet music? It's a clean, sweet kind of night. Don't you love it? I know I do. Shida and Asuka don't like each other, says Bliss Fan. Well, Asuka's not in the match, so you don't have to worry about that. Jeff turned heel on Angle in TNA. They had three matches, says Joey. Yeah, I don't remember offhand what events that was at, but considering how long they spent there, I'd just be shocked if they didn't have some big pay-per-view main event matches together. We got Paul Carpenter. No Hulk Hogan on Saturday night's main event. Is that something you're wishing for? Because I expect that he will be there. Unless maybe Jesse Ventura said you better keep him away. See, that's interesting. Hogan and Ventura potentially being in the same place on the same show at the same time is, that can get a little dicey there. But they've already announced Jimmy Hart. Obviously, Jesse will be there. And I would expect Hogan to be there. He was on the very first Saturday night's main event as well. He was the face of Saturday night's main event of that whole era. So I have no need for him to be on the show personally, but I'd be surprised if he's not there. What he would be doing, I don't know. He'll cut some goofy little promo, and then maybe we won't have to look at him after that. But I would expect him to be there. And Yuri says, New Day was one of the highlights of the late 2010s when it wasn't so bright out here. I'll tell you what, those some of those New Day Usos matches were the highlight of that era. None better than their Hell in a Cell match. I want to say that was 2017. They had that great Hell in a Cell match together. So they had some bangers for sure. It just got to the point where it was just like, okay, we don't need to see them anymore. Because we saw them so many times. After a while, you just kind of get tired of it. Well, that covers all your messages. I'm pretty sure I got everybody in there. So thank you guys for all the love tonight and all the support. I appreciate it very much. And we are going to be back live here on the channel on Monday. So that is where you will find me next time on the streams. It will be for the Monday Night Raw post show. If we get a Raw next week, as good as the one we had this week, then we're in for a treat. So let's hope they can keep the momentum going. One thing they're definitely not doing so far this month is phoning it in. It's been a pretty solid month so far. And then next weekend, of course, is Saturday night's main event. I will be live after that show. That'll be next Saturday. But you got episode 891 of the podcast dropping this Sunday. So make sure you check that out. Bred Hart checking in, a channel member for 33 months. It would be Karrion Kross cosplaying as Ventura coming out to the announce table, and he will refer to Michael Cole as Gorilla. Karrion Kross has one of the best Jesse Ventura impressions I've ever heard. Especially if he's talking about the Gulf of Tonkin. He's talking about the Gulf of Tonkin. I'm not going to bother doing the impression, but if you close your eyes, you would swear it was Jesse. And but I say one of because Will Sasso is also great. So it's one of those two. It's either Will Sasso or Karrion Kross. They have the best impression. Yuri. Oh, not Yuri. Not Yuri. I'm a little behind here. Ross Lawman says, did you see the rumored New Day story with Odyssey Jones? Well, it's not a rumored story. It's just they had a plan with Odyssey Jones joining New Day where it was going to lead. And then, of course, he got shit-canned. And they just had to change things up a little bit. But ultimately, I think they still ended up in the same place that they were going to be in. But the story was that basically New Day would go heel. And, you know, it would be a case where they felt like he was replacing, Big E was being replaced or something. I don't recall all the details. Meltzer mentioned it this week, but no, I mean, I could believe it because there was clearly some kind of plan for Odyssey Jones, you know, in the group, and we just never saw it kind of come full circle because he got fired and has not been mentioned since, which is very interesting that nothing has come out. He hasn't spoken publicly. Nobody has reported the real reason, what went down exactly. Like, it's been radio silence on the Odyssey Jones front, which very, very interesting. In an age where everything leaks and everything gets out, we have heard nothing. Nothing about him. Yuri says, has Sheeta and Asuka ever faced each other? We need that. I guess that's where BlissFan came from before, where he mentioned they don't like each other, apparently. But no, I don't think they have, not to my knowledge. Retro KOH, didn't Hardy turn heel against Angle in TNA? I believe he did. And Jamie Dorsch, the more useless NWO member, Ted DiBiase or Big Show, a.k.a. Giant? Ted DiBiase. Yeah, DiBiase in the NWO was completely and utterly useless. Even Vincent, okay, even Virgil had more of a use as an NWO member because he was the one who took the bumps and took the beatings. DiBiase, he couldn't take bumps at that point. And I have no memory of him really doing anything of note. You know, before that, he was a babyface manager for the Steiner Brothers. I remember that. But in the NWO, he was just another face in the crowd. Bret Hart said, I have just seen a video of Sheeta and Asuka dancing. Yes, but what happened when the camera stopped rolling? They probably had a fight to the death. Everyone joined the... Yeah, everyone did join the NWO. That's part of the reason why it's dead. That's why it died. Everybody and the janitor joined the NWO. The guy who rips your ticket when you come into the building, back when they still had physical tickets, he joined the NWO. The popcorn guy joined the NWO. It didn't mean anything anymore. Yuri says, Beefcake, a.k.a. Disciple, still the most useless. He was pretty useless too. But DiBiase's right up there with him. West Coast James, 42 months of channel membership. I'm sick as hell, but I would never miss a show. I love you, Solo. Well, I'm sending all the healing vibes towards you. I hate that you're sick. I hope you feel well soon. That sucks, but it is that time of year. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who get sick in the winter. I'm hoping to avoid it myself. Base Beers says Alexa Bliss attacked Jade Cargill. I don't believe she did, but can't rule it out. I'm going to say no on that, though. Yuri says, I still find it funny the Disciple used the stunner. He certainly didn't get it over, did he? Power Spine Games. I think DDP joked only him and Okerlund didn't join the NWO. Did Larry ever join? I don't think Larry Zbyszko ever joined. Dusty joined. Bischoff joined. I think Larry Z, he feuded with Bischoff. I don't think he ever actually joined the NWO, so. I may have joined the NWO at some point. Didn't even know it. Who knows? Who knows? And a very hearty congratulations, everybody in the chat. Wish congratulations to our friend Nier, who said he got some sweet news to share. He and his wife are expecting baby number 3. So congrats. Nier is keeping busy. I love to see it. All the best to you guys. That's awesome. Yuri says, is Larry a Paul Heyman dog? I guess he would have to be. Since Punk loves to call himself one of the... he calls himself the OG Paul Heyman guy, which is not true. But since he is one of the OG Paul Heyman guys, I guess Larry by proxy would have to be a Paul Heyman dog. That also means that AJ is a Paul Heyman girl. Why do I think DDP did not succeed in WWE? Because there were people there who did not see him as a real star. They did not see him as a real star, and so they tried to bury him, and that's what happened. And you'll hear from people, Bruce Pritchard, and people sometimes who try to argue otherwise. They're full of shit. They're full of shit. Like, there's no excuse for booking him the way they did in 2001. It's just... they sabotaged him. And there were people who just didn't like him. I mean, he rubbed people the wrong way. Undertaker didn't like him. He would come up with all these ideas. He would write things down. He would have like a script. And it's like, who's this guy think he is? Plus, he was the enemy. And so a lot of those guys were already kind of handicapped to begin with when they came in because they were from WCW, right? They were from the competition who tried to put us out of business. They're not one of us. So he already had that stink on him from the moment he came in. Yeah, Yuri says DDP and WWE was a sin. It was a huge missed opportunity. And I know he hurt his back not long after that. And physically, he was pretty much shot after that. But you could have definitely gotten some big matches with him in 2001. It's just this. You can understand why somebody like Sting didn't want to go. Sting had no faith that they would treat him respectfully or they would not bury him or his character. It's hard to disagree with the way he felt at that time. Imagine them bringing Sting in and doing something like that with Sting. Jamie says, Giant was somehow a two-time NWO member in WCW. I'm not surprised. It just got to the point there where not a whole lot made sense in that company. And then they were dead. And the wrestling business was worse off for it. Because people didn't know what the fuck they were doing. That, and you had people who wanted to see WCW fail. So when you don't have a whole lot of friends in the corporate end of things and have no interest in really working with any wrestling company, it was a whole amalgamation of different factors that led to the death of WCW, unfortunately. Yuri said Sting was smart, obviously. Right, Paul? Well, at least he had a WrestleMania match. We don't need to talk about the finish of that match, but at least he could say he had a WrestleMania match. Was Wade Boggs ever in the NWO, or am I losing my mind? Wade Boggs was very good friends with Kurt Hennig. Kurt Hennig was in the NWO, so he may have done something where he showed up on a show once. Yeah, Wade Boggs and Kurt Hennig were very good friends. I think he may have spoken at Kurt's funeral. All right. Let's wrap this up here. Again, thank you for the support. Check out episode 891 of the podcast this weekend. And then live again with you on Monday night. Take care, guys. Thanks for the love.